let's remember where we were, which we were discussing the Schrodinger equation, which is often called a wave equation. But of course, among the aficionados who are so focused on it, it's called the wave equation. So for me, it's a wave equation, or an equation whose solutions exhibit, to some extent, wave-like properties. So this is our equation one. We had it on the board last week, and it stayed there for a while. And I'm just talking about the free Schrodinger equation, no other impediments. X is in Rn, and I want to solve this, and it's an initial value problem. So when t is equal to 0, so t, of course, is in all of the reals. Actually, time is a question, so time can go forward. I don't want to restrict time to go only forward. It can go forward or backwards. And that's good. But when time is equal to 0, generally I want to assign initial data. And then we decided that there were we decided that there is a way of giving a solution using the Fourier transform. So if C of X and T has an expression, one way to express it is 1 upon root 2 pi to the n by a Fourier integral, r to the n, e to the I c dot x, e to the I mod c squared over 2. C, of course, is a vector, and this is rn of c space times e to the I c squared over 2 t times the initial data c 0, its Fourier transform, in fact, dc. That's one expression. And then after doing a Fourier integral, which I think it was up to you to justify doing this oscillatory integral. People are sneaking in on me. Can't escape. You can also write this in the following x integral, n-dimensional x space. I'm going to integrate against the initial data itself. As a function of y, say, dy. And then this is the form of 1 upon root 2 pi I t 2 to the n e to the, now let me get the sign right, minus I x minus y squared over 2 t. Two interesting expressions. And we decided that, I'm just doing a fast review of our work. We decided that it's nice to put the initial data in two spaces. One is good for PDE, that is, if I take C naught of X in Schwartz class, then I'm going to give this a name. I'm going to say this is the Schrodinger flow to time t acting on C naught as a function of X. We had the heat flow before for the heat equation, which was a semigroup. Now this is a group. And that's an interesting exercise. If somebody wants to do some homework, there's a piece that you can put on your problem set. But let's make it a voluntary problem set. There'll be plenty more today to show that it's a group, that this gives you actually a unitary group of transformations, not just a semigroup. S is the flow for the Schrodinger operator. For the heat equation.
Yeah.
So this is a group. That's different than a semigroup. Thank you. Okay. If we start out with data in S, then the result is that C of X T is in S. I mean that's in SX for each T. Okay, so that's one fact. And maybe so that's good for us as analysts. We like things which stay smooth and don't develop singularities. Actually, it's the contrary. We like things which develop singularities. That makes it harder. But in any case, that's a fact. And the one which is more, if you are a if you are, have a warm feeling for quantum mechanics, you actually prefer this statement, which is, if I start in L2, say you have Rn, this is again x, then the solution is always in L2 of Rn of x for each t. And here's where we employed the argument of reducto ad absurdum, if you remember that joke. So that's the flow, and it preserves those spaces. We talked about that, and then we talked a bit about interpretation. So there's a bit about interpretation. Which says that, in fact, well, I'll give my own version. The wave function doesn't predict an outcome. It predicts only the probability density of an outcome, and that you compute using solutions of the Schrodinger equation. But the probability density itself is dpt of x is mod cxt modulus squared dx. And of course, the initial probability density is given by the initial data. And in fact, you can't see phase in the initial probability density, but it has a lot to do with what happens at later time. So one of these funny things that quantum mechanics has a phase in it, but which is important. It's that's a true quantum effect. And so one thing you want to say is the probability of a particle being in a set A, subset of Rn, at time t is equal to the integral over that set A of dpt of x, which I'll just write again, integral over the set A, mod cxt squared dx. And in particular, if we set A equal to Rn of x, we'll find that this is equal to the cxt, it's L2 norm squared. And by what you might say, it's pretty reasonable to apply reducto ad absurdum, we can say that that has to be the same as the L2 norm of the initial data. That's not a theorem, but that's a joke, and we proved that in any case, and I'll prove it again today. And then we also had another set of statements, which is let me see how I want to say this, that the energy is conserved. So the energy of a wave function, there's no potential energy, otherwise they add terms to equation one. So there's only kinetic energy, and that's just a name for an integral, but it does give us an intuition about it, mod 1/2 mod grad c squared dx. And the statement is that the energy at time t is equal to the energy at time 0. And that's another statement about Schrodinger flow. And if I remember right, that we had a theorem which gave us the preserving Schwarz class and preserving L2. Then we had a proposition which talked about not just the energy, but any Fourier multiplier. I'm trying to give a 5-minute background, and that takes us up to present, doesn't it? I think that's right. Is that where we were last time? If we weren't, and maybe it's still nice to repeat, what do people think? No comments. That allows me to do whatever I want. Okay, so I'm going to give this proposition 3 again, which is given any Fourier multiplier And there's I'm saying it in a way which is just an increment off from being rigorous, because I'm going to allow unbounded operators as Fourier multipliers, and really you have to take limits to be careful with this. But if that's okay with you, that's okay with me, at least for the moment. Okay? So any Fourier multiplier M of D, so that is, this is my habit of putting the definition in the statement of the theorem, that is M D C of X and T is equal to the integral e to the I C X M of C C hat of C and T D C. Okay? Given any Fourier multiplier, those act like this. Then we have the following. Then the Fourier multiplier acting on a solution at time t, L2, is equal to that Fourier multiplier acting on the initial data. And it reminds me, I forgot to say something right after this interpretation, which is relevant to this proposition and also conservation of energy, which is this is a distribution of position in space of the particle. That's its interpretation. But there's also a distribution function for momentum of the particle. And so what I want to say is there's a dp hat t of c, which is mod c hat squared c t squared d c, starting out with the initial probability of just distribution of momentum, which is, of course, you put in C0 hat of C squared dxc. And from the Poincaré theorem, when you look at, oh, and so if you want to measure the expected momentum in a region of momentum space, you would do the following integral. Integral over B, expected momentum lying in a set B in a momentum space of a D P T hat of C is, of course, the amount of C hat at time T contained in that set. That's, you could say that's the P hat of B is equal to these things. And related to this line here is that the total probability of the momentum space L2 has to be preserved, which is this line, which is the L2 norm of in C of C hat is equal to the original L2 norm C hat 0, and of course by the Poincaré theorem these are equal to and these are equal to, and that's one way to prove it. You can prove it directly too. It's one way to prove the bottom line is to prove the top line. I'll give it a third proof in a second. Okay. And so that says something about this expression. So what I guess I want to do, is I need to prove proposition 3. Or was that a homework set problem? No. Nope. Let me prove proof of proposition 3. Is there any desire for audience input into this proof? Well, I guess not. So, let's see. If I look at MD, well, remember what D is. See, D is just a notation for on the Fourier side, you multiply by M times C. In particular, if this is just a D, then here inside is a C. But when you have a C, that's given to you by 1 upon I d by dx on the Fourier on the un-Fourier side. So this is just a reminder that d is really 1 upon I d by dx. And of course, m of d, well, you can implement in this way the same as you can implement a derivative in that way. Okay? Now, I'd like to then say, well, what about m d c? I don't have to have time in here. That's sort of just a an affectation. Make us think about the Schrodinger equation. This is just the general definition of a Fourier multiplier. So MDC hat of Xi is equal to MXi C hat of Xi. Just you read that formula with your Fourier inversion theorem hat on. And so therefore, if I want to measure MD at C of XT in L2 norm, maybe I'll square it, that's the same as taking the L2 norm of MC C hat of C in T, which is, of course, integral over Rn, the absolute value of MC, the absolute value of e to the I C squared over 2t, the absolute value of C hat C0 squared dC. Because this part is C hat of CT, and then the M is what the Fourier multiplier does. And it's pretty clear what happens is you just put absolute values around everything, and the Schrodinger propagator on the Fourier side has length 1. It doesn't see how much it's oscillating when you take its absolute value. And so therefore, you just sit right, rewrite this as 1, so that's the same as integral over Rn of mc c hat 0 c squared dx. But that's its value initially. MD C naught of X squared L2. So that's good because in particular, if I take, how do I get the energy? Well, this is a vector quantity, right? But it's really multiplication by C. So the energy of C of X T is the is 1/2 then the integral of grad C of X T, grad is only with respect to X, of course, squared dx. But of course I can write that in the Fourier side as 1/2 integral of C C hat C T squared dx. And now Xi is a vector, right? So let me just make sure this is looks right. It's Xi squared C squared. But we're in the same form as this. The same form of problem as this. And so that's one proof of conservation of energy. Okay. Let me talk about moments, which I talked about a little bit last time. In fact, it seems to me I ended on the note of moments.
There's also momentum conservation here because particles free and there is no
potential. This is a man with very strong intuition. That's absolutely true. Doesn't get balled up in having to deal with the potential. Okay, well, let's talk about moments. So if I have a distribution, if I have a probability measure given by a distribution, I can talk about its moments. So the kth moment, what do I want to use? The kth moment of p of t is equal to integral, I take the probability distribution, d p t of x, and then multiply it by x to the kth power. So k is now a multi-index, natural number to the nth power, multi-index, right? That means it's k1 dot 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 up to kn integer entries. Okay, and another way to write this, of course, is an integral x to the k against c x t squared dx. And in particular, m0 of p of t is equal to the integral of x to the 0. So c x t squared dx. And lying over on this board over here, it says, in fact, that's preserved. Here it is over in this board. So that says it's equal to the 0 moment of the probability distribution at zero. And the other line, so that's this line, but the other line, just using the Poincaré identity, says that M0 hat of PT hat. Sorry about the too many hats, but I guess I want this to be C hat of X of C T squared D C. Well, we know from that line that it's also M0 hat of P0 hat. So the zeroth moment of the position density and of the momentum density are preserved by Schrodinger evolution. And it's a good thing, too, because you don't want to lose probability in these processes. I can think of some cases with a potential where you would lose probability, and that's not a good state. That's where you have non-self-adjoint boundary conditions, maybe at infinity. If the potential goes to negative infinity very fast, it sends all the particles to infinity fast enough to lose stuff in finite time. That's not a good situation to be in. So it's not a good physical situation to be in. So there are mathematical situations where it's not true, but with no potential energy, it is true. So now we just proved a proposition about Fourier multipliers, which allows us to say that if I look at m hat k of p hat of t, that's equal to, let's see, I should use the formula, c to the k mod c hat c t squared d c. And I guess it doesn't follow exactly from the proposition, but maybe from its proof, that this is equal to the moment at time equals zero, m hat k the zero distribution. And in particular, I should have said the energy of C at time t is, the second moment. It's the sum over j equals 1 to n of the of the cj squared c hat c t squared d c. So this is can represent it as the sum over moment hats of but my notation is a little screwed up. How about sum over kj of p hat 0, p hat t, but it's equal to the sum over the moments, of p hat 0 by the theorem, where this is j equals 1 to n. I have to tell you what kj is. Kj is equal to, kj is equal to, zeros, except into the jth spot, where I have a 1. Because that's how I get a cj out. I guess in this jth spot I have a 2, because I want it squared. So that's how I get a cj squared out. So it's a sum of second moments. It's the trace of some matrix you make out of all covariances. Something like that. Okay, and now I've made everything in terms of m hat, so we go up here and say, all the momentum moments are preserved, and so the energy is preserved. Second proof of conservation of energy. It's actually the same as the first proof. So my question to you, which is the same thing as a question last time, are the position moments preserved? And I proved for you that the zero moment is preserved. And now you're supposed to think about it. So who has any thoughts? Is the first moment preserved? It's like the heat equation had moments, which we discussed. The heat equation had a slightly different object. That's a good thing to contrast. From the heat equation, uh, dpt of x was equal to, what was our solution of the heat equation? U? I forget. Okay, yeah, I'll call it U. So it's U of x t dx. But no square, no absolute value. It's U dx. And here, our probability is c squared dx. It's a different animal. And then, so that's already one difference. And the second difference was its moments. And we had formulae for its moments in terms of moments of the initial data, which were part of a homework set, I seem to remember. So a question, are there such formulae for the Schrodinger equation? Well, it's going to come up as a problem set, so you can either answer it now or then, but you, well, okay, you'll be answering it. I'll get to it. I have to formulate it as a proper problem set problem, but I like that idea. It's an interesting problem. I'm not going to give it in the Schrodinger equation section. At least that wasn't my plan. I was going to give it a little later, but still, it's an interesting question. Okay, I want to give a second proof of this fact. Sorry? The symmetry of psi. You mean even or odd moments, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, it could be, that's right, it's sort of a subset of the question I ask you. If you insist that the wave function be symmetric, then it could be all the odd moments have to vanish no matter what. But then I'll ask you about the even, and then I'll ask you the question about the even moments of a symmetric wave function. And vice versa for the odd. And since it's multidimensional, it's not clear that every moment is even or odd, right?
Okay.
Because I can have what's even in x1 but odd in x2. So it's a more complicated symmetry argument. But you can work out some would vanish, but I'm going to then just ask about all, so you'll be back in trouble. Okay? So I want to give a reproof of this fact. This fact we proved using the Poincaré theorem. We used the Poincaré theorem an awful lot. I'm going to reprove this fact with more hypotheses. But still, it's a nice thing to prove. So what I want to prove is proof of conservation of probability. When, in cases where C of X, T is twice differentiable and always L2. I maybe even want more. Yeah, I even want more. I think I want this H2. Did I tell you what that was? I'll remind you. I did tell you what it is, but it's this is a set of functions psi such that psi and first derivatives of psi and second derivatives of psi are all L2 functions. So it's more hypothesis than I have over here, but the proof is different. And it's one of these classic proofs, which is where it originated. So I'm going to iterate over a set A. I'm going to integrate over a set A. Let's see what this wants to do. I want to phrase it as follows. I'm going to take the time derivative of the position of the likelihood of the probability of the particle being in set A. I'm going to take that. Okay? And I want the set A to be not an arbitrary set, but something with smooth, I want it to be a domain, something with reasonably smooth boundaries so I can integrate by parts. Well, that's like saying, take d by dt of the integral over A of mod psi of xt squared dx. That's what t of A is from this blackboard. So maybe it's not so much fun to differentiate a square like that, so I'll put in explicitly psi bar xt dx. And then that is, of course, equal to the integral over A of partial t psi of xt times psi bar of xt plus psi of xt partial t C of x t itself bar dx. D by dt is a real operator. And of course, C is smooth enough and satisfies the differential equation. So I can rewrite this as integral over A. Well, let's see. Where did that equation go? It's all the way over here. D by dt C is equal to minus I upon 2 Laplacian C. So it's minus I over 2 Laplacian C against C bar plus C minus I over 2 Laplacian C bar dx. And what's nice is there's a minus I over 2 here and a minus I over 2 bar here. So it's, I'm going to get out a minus I upon 2 integral over A of Laplacian C C bar minus C Laplacian C bar dx. That minus sign is due to the bar, so it's a good thing we took a bar. And of course, this is calling to integrate by parts. So I integrate by parts, I get a minus I upon 2 integral over A of grad C dot grad C bar minus grad C dot grad C bar. Here I integrate by parts that way, here I integrate by parts that way, plus boundary terms. And I've run out of room, so I'm going to put the boundary terms in this box. But I think you should be better equipped in your notes to make it neater. I apologize. Plus, so this plus boundary terms is over here. Plus boundary terms, so it's plus an integral over the boundary of A of, what did I have? Minus I upon 2, which is plus 1 upon 2i, times the integral of the boundary over A of minus, let's see what I have. I have C grad C bar. So I have C grad C bar minus, I did the bar on the other side of my notes. I did the physicist way on my notes and the mathematician way on the board. So I have to redo things backwards. So I'm going to get a grad C times a C bar minus a C times grad C bar dot N dot the normal to the boundary ds, normal to the boundary of the set A ds. And that leads us to define the quantum mechanical, this plus this is equal to this. So this leads to the idea of a flux. So it's the quantum mechanical flux is this quantity, 1 upon 2i. Now should the sign be? Vitali, is that the sign or is the other sign as the flux? I think that's the sign. That's the sign. The flux sign will change depending on which side I did it, I think. 1 upon 2i, C bar grad C, it's a vector, remember this is a vector, minus C grad C bar. Okay? And now, getting back to the point, I really should have put A to be everything, and with my hypotheses, these flux terms actually go to zero as you take limits for A large. So what really should happen is that as you take an exhausting sequence of sets, the boundary goes to infinity, this should go to zero. And I forgot to show you here that this is the same term as here, so I should have crossed them out. And that so in the limit, so in case A is R, A equals R N, then we have the d by dt of the total probability, which is, what is it? C of x t squared L2 norm, but over all of Rn, is equal to this gives 0, and this goes to, this term goes to 0 as we take the a's to the boundary. So that's one way, of, and the, probably the classical way, of saying that the probability is preserved. Now, when you add things like variable coefficients and quantum mechanical potentials, no longer do we have such a neat way of saying what the Schrodinger kernel is. So you have to revert rather to a proof more like this. Nice to give it in any case. It's not 0. It's a fixed term. This is 0. I crossed it out. But this is not. So what it says, if you allow me to replace this, it says that the change in probability over a set A is equal to the integral over the boundary of A at change in a set A at time t is the integral over the boundary of 1 upon 2i c bar grad c minus c grad c bar ds. So the change in the probability of position probability in A is equal to its flux, quantum flux over the boundary. That's it. Which is what it should be. It's a conservation law. That's the way conservation laws read. The only way to get rid of probability of position is to have it leak through the boundary. And that's the leakage rate. It's a vector. Whoops, it's a vector, and I forgot to say that the dot n, dot the normal to the boundary, ds. Sorry, put that back in. A little piece of notation. It's always best to know as many different possible notations for the same thing as exists. Then you can talk with more people. So, for example, we said that here's the L2 norm of a wave function. Here's the L2 norm of a wave function squared, say. That, of course, was this integral, C of xt squared dx. Other people write it in terms of bracket notation. This, I think, was invented by Dirac, bracket notation. Some people write it as an inner product with a comma. Okay. Probably there are other ways. There's probably infinity ways to write it, but at least this is sort of a good thing to start with. Now, how about the moments? I could have the moment, the kth moment of C is equal to, well, one is I take x to the k, integrate against the dp. Oh, I also could have given this as a integral of over Rn dpt of x, dp of x, not saying what time is. X to the k, dp of x, which I can also write as x to the k, mod of c of x, t squared dx. I usually prefer that, the straightforward analytic notation, but you can also write it in terms of Dirac notation. It's c with the x, the k, x to the k position operator involved. So you can write it in a lot of ways. Those are a couple of ways. And just to do the other moments, the ones which are preserved, mk hat of c. Oh, I didn't write that. This is not my notation. It's of p. So mk hat of p hat, we could have written it as c to the k d p hat of c, but we can also write it as a c to the k c hat of c squared dc, and we can also write it as c hat k c hat, but we can also write it, of course, as c operator 1 upon I d by dx to the kth power c. A lot of ways to write it. And just sort of standard quantum mechanics notation. Okay, let's do something more than just notation now, and I'd like to say, suppose I'm given an L2 function c, let's forget time for a moment and just say that I'm given an L2 function C. If it's non-zero, then the zeroth moment of P, of the position, is non-zero, as long as it's non-zero. So this not equals zero. So what I want to say is I can adjust my point of view looking at C in such a way that its zeroth momentum, so that its first moments are normalized to zero. So what I want to say is I can change the origin in X, and I can change the origin in C so that the first moment of position and the first moment of momentum, well, that's hard to say, first moment of momentum, both vanish. So I want to say that clearly. So this is a general function. Under, trivial, let's see, under simple, change of origin, so by change of origin is, what should I say, under translation in X and C, we can arrange. So I don't really change C, I only change where I put zero. Right? We can arrange that M1 of P equals zero equals M1 hat of P hat. So what am I saying? DP, I'm saying, is going to be equal to C squared DX. Well, I guess I have to. If I say something, I'm supposed to prove it. So let's do this. Thanks for asking. We'll get to that, but first I'll do translation in X. And people call these position boosts, momentum boosts. There's a whole lore about it. But it's very simple. Yes, question? What is probability in Fourier space? It's a space of Xs over which there's a distribution function which is given by a density. Density is mod C squared. So the probability, what do you say? So the measure is given by mod C squared dx. And then I normalize it to be 1. I normalize it to be 1 by, if it's not 1, divide by its L2 norm. In momentum space, it's probability of finding the momentum of a particle among this set of momenta. And usually, if I have a classical particle, I can choose its position. I want it here, and I can choose its momentum. I'm going to push it here when I set it off on its trajectory around the room. You cannot do that with quantum mechanics because it has to be C hat, right? It can't be another function. Once you specify C by the Fourier inversion formula, C hat is fixed. Difference between quantum mechanics and classical mechanics. Nice to get used to that idea. Everyone comfortable? Shall we carry on? Is everyone still interested? More or less. Okay. What was I trying to prove? Let me make a statement. Proposition. It's really just a small statement. Proposition 5. I'm setting up for a theorem, but this is a proposition. So under transformation of X and C. I'm not being precise what I say by transformation. It'll be clear when I prove it, okay? We can arrange. We may adjust C such that M1 of P, well, remember, P P is dP is equal to C squared dx. M1 of P is equal to 0, and also M1 hat of P hat. And I'm supposed to do that, so let's prove it. Sorry? No. No. Because these are functions of x, I don't have time in at the moment. This is a statement about a function of x. So let's calculate what M1 of C is. It's equal to the integral of x mod C of x squared dx. Now, something has been annoying me, which, of course, if I have a typical, if I have an L2 function, this could be infinite. So I can't adjust an infinite thing, I'm afraid. So now I have to go back and say something or other, which is, how do I say this? Let's suppose M1 of C, that's what I want to say. Suppose M1 of C. Well, let's see. C is in L2, and it's not equal to 0, and M1 of C is finite. And if M1 of C is finite, does M1 hat of C have to be finite? You can tell by tone of voice, the answer is no. If M1C hat is finite, does M1 of C have to be finite? Also no. Suppose C is non-zero, it's L2 function, and it's finite moments. These two first moments are finite. I'm supposed to put in C, I'm supposed to put in P, because that's the moments of the probability distribution given by C. All these finite things. Now I'm on safe ground. Under transformation, we may adjust C such that it has zero moments. And it's really just changing the origin in X and also simultaneously changing the origin in C. So let's do that. So this is here. But how about if I just decide I'm going to change the origins as my new X prime? How about if I write X as being a new X prime minus change the origin by X naught? I translate over. So that says that C of X minus X naught, which in previous lecture we've called the translation by X naught of C of X, right? And now let's calculate its moment. Well, here it is written on the board, so now I just write it in X prime variables. It's integral X prime minus X naught C of X prime minus X naught squared dx, which is equal to, of course, X prime mod C of X prime minus X naught, of the translation of X naught of C, a function of X prime, right, squared, minus X naught, which is some vector. This is a vector quantity. Scalar in R1. Just, if you don't like it vector, make it scalar in R1. X naught, integral of translation of X naught C of X prime squared dx prime, which is equal to dx. And of course, what I should have done first is M naught, but I wanted to surprise you. M naught of the translation by X naught of C is equal to the integral of mod X C of X prime minus X naught squared dx. But this is invariant under translations. So the zeroth moment doesn't mind being translated around. And so what I can say is that this is now the first moment of the translation by X naught of P minus X naught times the zeroth moment of the translation, but that's the zeroth moment of P. And this is, on the right-hand side, it's the first moment of P. And I made a mistake here. This is supposed to be the first moment of P. And now solve for X naught. say, I want the translated function, the translated probability, to have zero moments. So that says set x naught to be equal to. So that says this is supposed to be equal to zero, and it will be if x naught is equal to m1p over m0p. So x naught is equal to minus m1p over m0p. And of course, m0p is non-zero, that's this, and m1p is finite, that's that. It's just changing the origin. So let's switch the origin. Now let's do the other side. So now that we've switched the origin, so it's fixed, let's do the other side. So similarly, let's look at m1 hat of p hat. And that's equal to integral of c hat c squared dc, which I'd like to rewrite as integral of c bar. Well, I'm not doing that way, am I? I'd like to rewrite it as 1 upon I d by dx c of x times c bar of x dx. Well, so this is some finite number. Well, what I want to do is check that, is not look exactly at c. So what I want to do is instead look at m1 hat of the momentum boost. Ah, dear. The momentum boost c naught of p hat, where I want to define that as follows. It's c of e to the I, and we get the sign right, e to the I c naught of x. I'm doing something wrong. I'm going to use this last expression. So it's equal to 1 upon I d by dx of the quantity e to the I c naught x. That's what I want, c of x. That's that times e to the I c naught of x c of x bar dx. I ran out of room for the dx. So what am I doing? I'm first adjusted the position so that it was zero, and now I can also multiply c by a phase vector. So it's not a constant number, it's a complex exponential in x, but if I do so, I just want you to notice that I don't change any of these quantities that I did at first. It commutes with what I did at first, because you only see the modulus of c squared. Okay? On the other hand, when I take a derivative of a changed, of a complex exponential in there, I get an extra factor. So this is equal to, let me see, integral c of x bar, that's the last term, dx. Outside of here, I have an e to the minus I c naught x. From this differentiation, I have an e to the I, by the Leibniz rule, e to the I c x, 1 upon I d by dx c, but I have another term, which if this 1 upon I d by dx hit the exponential, I'd also get down c naught c e to the I c x. I put them both outside. Now I cancel this with that, and I can rewrite this as equal to the derivative against c bar dx, which is m1 hat of p hat plus c naught, that's a fixed number, times c against c bar. So that's equal to m0 of p. And if I want m1 of the boost of p hat to be 0, I have to solve this equation equal to 0, which is a way of saying c naught is equal to minus m1 hat of p hat, which, as we said, was finite, divided by m0 of t, which we said was non-zero. Just set it to be. So it's just two choices. First x naught, then c naught. or 2n choices because each one is vectorial. Okay? And that proves proposition 5. Sorry, say that again? This and this.
But then when you do differentiation, somehow you got only one extra term and not two.
But I only differentiate this term, because this I differentiate, this I don't. I'm not putting it in, I'm changing the function. I'm translating on the Fourier side. It's a new function. Just like this is a new function, it's tau x naught of c. So what I'm saying is, I can adjust, given a function, I can adjust it in, so to speak, trivial ways by changing my origin in x, and also by changing it to be x naught instead of 0, and by changing my origin in c, by having it c naught instead of 0, such that the resulting new function, it's the old function in new coordinates, has these moment properties. Are you happier? No. Well, this is a further discussion. I'm doing this because I want to talk about the uncertainty principle. And so let's go on. The uncertainty principle concerns the second moment of a function C. So I want to talk about this uncertainty principle. But that concerns M2 of C, which is integral of x squared mod C of x squared dx. Another way to write it is C x squared C. Another way to write it, some people write is the uncertainty in of P. Sorry, chalk dust. Excuse me. That's not Laplacian. Sorry. Let's just have it up there on the board for the moment. It's not Laplacian. Because it's the X one, not the C one. I don't know. Shall I erase it? Excuse me. I'll erase it, but it's equally confusing if I erase it. I'll just erase the whole thing. Never mind. Delta big X. You want me to write like delta? I'm not studying X. I'm studying P. Which is the probability through which the random variable x is distributed. I never talked about random variables. Okay, I'll put up a big X. And then we can just debate what x is. But at least I'm pleasing the audience.
Delta x.
Oh, okay, could be. Yeah, it could be. Delta x. Change in position, uncertainty in position of x. There we go. Variance in position of x. And I want a C to be such that M0 of C is equal to, we should have always, of P should always have been 1, but in fact, all I want is non-zero. I'm not adjusting. We could adjust, and then we'll just divide through by the norm, but let's not adjust. And then we want M1 of P, let's do that thing and that make it 0, and M1 hat of P hat. Let's do the other thing and make it 0 from the proposition. And then, of course, I want to look at the second moment, M2 hats. This is supposed to be P. P hat is equal to 1 upon I d buddy x of C of x mod squared dx. Whoops. And this could be also C 1 upon I d by dx squared c, and that's, of course, delta p. Happy with that? The uncertainty in position, so theorem. And I've just lost my theorem number. Theorem 6 makes the following statement. It's Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. Says the following thing, that the zero moment squared of P is less than or equal to 4 times the second moment of P times the second hat moment of P hat. Or you can rewrite this as 4 times uncertainty position, variance in position, variance in momentum. And if we had normalized, this would be 1. And Planck's constant is equal to 1 in this calculation, but if there was actually a Planck's constant, it would be here. It would appear in the momentum variable, and so we would have, you would multiply through by it, and you get an h bar squared. Fourth? Squared. Probably squared. Okay. Cool. Let's make it look like analysis. That is. Sorry? I have 2 values of P there, so. It's H. Hmm. Well, maybe you look at the square root of delta P, square root of delta X.
Okay.
That's probably it. That's probably it. This is a squared version of that. Okay, so that is, let's do the analysis statement. I can have 1/4 the L2 norm of C to the 4th power, also we have to square it, less than or equal to X squared mod CX squared dx times integral of 1 upon I d by dx cx squared dx. And of course, if you wanted, you could write this as c squared. I guess x is a vector, so it should have an absolute value over. This c also is a vector. C squared c hat c squared dx, if you wanted. So, well, proof. Let's see, given the time, I should prove it, and then we'll have a short break, which is, what I'm going to do is I'm going to prove it for F in Schwartz class. I'm just going to be a little lazy. I prove it for F in Schwartz class and just wave my hands over the limit. But that makes every operation easy to do, and the limit is also easy, but I won't do it. Okay, so let's just take F, or say C in Schwartz class, and to do this. Okay, and so that goes as follows. I want to calculate the following things. Commutator of 1 upon I d by dx with x on a function f, on a function c. And that, of course, is 1 upon I d by dx of x c minus x times 1 upon I d by dx of c. And you see by the Leibniz rule that the derivative can hit x, by which we get 1 out, 1 upon I, c. But if the derivative hits the c, I have x, I, 1 upon I, x, p, x, minus 1 upon I, x, p, x. So it goes to 0, so we have that result. So let's now integrate something. I have c bar against, I'm doing it backwards. I guess I must have been in a physics-y mood writing these notes. So I want to integrate 1 upon I d by dx x c, integrate of c, a function of x, integrated against c bar. iterate everywhere. And because of the nature of this commutator, which we just calculated, it's equal to 1 upon I, C times C bar. Just I comes out, this gives me 1 upon I comes out, this just gives me 1 upon I, and then half C, C bar, so it's L2 norm of C squared. Okay? But it's also, let's calculate it in another way. So that's one way to calculate it. Let's calculate it another way. So integral of Rn, 1 upon I, d by dx, x, c of x against c bar of x, dx. I want to calculate this as being let's see, and I want to calculate this in an absolute value. And I claim this is by pure algebra, this is equal to twice the real part of the integral 1 upon I d by dx of f of x times x f of x dx. And to do that, I will write this in this form. So there's a sum of two terms. In the first term, I would integrate by parts. Oh, there's a bar. And the first time, I would integrate by parts, and then I would be left with an xc and a derivative on the c bar. In the second term, I would take the x and consider it as multiplying the other function, and then I have a dxc, xc bar, and that would give me appropriate minus sign to say it's a sum of two terms. This and the one with the bar on it. And so it's twice the real part of that by integration by parts. Okay? Now, use Cauchy-Schwarz. Use Cauchy-Schwarz inequality to find something which is bigger than this, which is always bigger than this. And that's going to be, well, 2 is always the equal, same size as 2. But then if I say the real part has to be bounded by the absolute value, then I can say that I'm going to take the L2 norm of this. This is a times b, so it's L2 norm of a times L2 norm, bounded by L2 norm of a times L2 norm of b, which I can rewrite as being 1 upon I d by dx of f of x mod squared dx, but to the 1 half times, similar thing, x f of x mod squared dx. And my c has become an f. Modulating out of Greek into Latin. So c, 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 square root, which is equal to, from our adjustments, it's equal to twice m2 of p to the 1 half, and this is m2 hat of p hat. It's also to the 1 half, but now we're done. So, problem set. I hate to say it, it's already number 8, isn't it? Amazing. Oh, by the way, I had enough time to grade problem set 6, but I didn't get to everyone's problem set 7. So if you haven't received your 7 back, it's because I didn't get to it. So I will get to it as soon as I can. Don't worry. Start to work on 8. If you haven't done 7, start to work on 7. Sorry? 9 already. What happened with number 8? Oh, it's coming today. Of course. Of course. Problem set number 9. I have 2 problems I want to suggest. One is, this is an inequality. So So which functions minimize that inequality? And is it ever equal? So which functions, so which functions minimize the inequality? And then is it equality? Is it sharp? That is there a function which has it as a minimum? And then the problem set two is, we've used a commutator. So this has something to do with non-commuting operators. So we think of multiplying by x is a position operator. We sample where we are likely to have position by multiplying by x's, or powers of x. And we sample momentum by multiplying by powers of c, which is like taking 1 upon I, b by the x's. And this is like saying you can't measure both with infinite accuracy at the same time, because the variance of one times the variance of the other is bounded below. So I'd like to ask, so that can happen with, and the problem is, and this calculation works for any two operators, any two observables you want to try. So the problem is that they don't commute. So my question is about commuting operators. We have used that we had an operator A and an operator B, and their commutator was non-zero. And so we found this not to be equal to zero. And in particular, we found our A and B such that this was equal to the identity, well, 1 upon I times the identity. Right? So this relationship is important. So I want to ask the following. And it's important in quantum mechanics. So I want to ask the following. Of course, and we are also working on a Hilbert space. So my question number two is, suppose we worked on a finite dimensional space. Operators on a finite dimensional space are matrices. Linear operators are matrices. And they also don't necessarily commute. So the question is, can you find A, B matrices, so matrices, n by n matrices, so on R to n, C to n maybe, anything you want, satisfying this. And as you think about that, you might think about this. Can you find bounded operators A, B on L2, so in the linear operators on L2, satisfying star. And if you can, give them to me, and if you can't, show me that you can't. And that just goes to show, it goes to say something about this. X is an unbounded operator as an operator on Rn. And 1 upon I d by the x is an unbounded operator on Rn. So you could take an L2 function, multiply by x, and the first moment could be infinity, or undefined. Could not have a limit. Okay? Let's stop for the break. We're long overdue. So let's make it a short break and come back. Move on.
Why is that?
Oh, I did it really too fast. I did it too fast. This is, let's just do this calculation. This is equal to what? It's equal to 1 upon I d by dx of xc minus x times 1 upon I d by dx of c.
That's true. That's exactly this.
That's exactly that. So the whole thing is equal to, I'm going to integrate by parts here, Rm, integrate by parts, I'm going to get xc times minus, for integrating by parts, 1 upon I d by dx of c bar plus, if I take the bar over that, that's the first term, minus x 1 upon I d by dx c times c bar. Times c bar. And this is how I'm kind of considering things. So I want to do this. Dx. Okay?
Okay.
And now I'm a little bit stuck because I have a sign mistake. This turned out to be plus minus I. So I and I. So this is a bar. So this is a quantity minus its complex conjugate. So it looks like its imaginary part. That's the problem. It was a real part with no I. The imaginary part with an I. That's the problem. It doesn't change the proof. It's just I had to write the imaginary part. It's equal to twice the imaginary part of the integral of x c times 1 upon I d by dx c bar dx. And I screwed that up. It's imaginary part.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Cauchy-Schwarz on this. Put these two factors. Okay? Good. Ah, you need a staple.
Yeah, no.
Sorry? It's yours and his. Oh, you don't need a staple. Good, thanks. I don't give enough problem sets.
This is code one, yeah.
Sorry? Yeah, it's pretty simple. Are you working hard enough? Not hard enough?
What did you do to the board right now?
I erased it. I did this calculation equals this, and I realized that it wasn't real, it was an imaginary part. Absolute value of imaginary part. So this equals that, and the same time this equals that. Okay? So I needed two points to prove the theorem. I needed this equality, and I also needed this equality. And this is a 2, and that's a 2, and that's an 8 less than 2. And then this is equal to twice m2 of p. So there, now the board is back in shape, but it's best to read it as this, that. This is the same as that. Modulo minus sign. Oh, but absolute value, so that's taken care of.
You could be neater?
You could be neater. Yeah, look. I can't read it. I don't know exactly what you're doing. I like the set of T and X, you know, your mathematical statement is not complete. The set of T and X, which forms a light cone, this equals 0, is equal to et cetera, right?
That's the one. Well, I'm this rotation.
So.
Well, this is okay.
Right. I understand your thought, but you could be neater.
Yes. Okay. Just ask your way
to me. Okay. Hi. Boy, there are a lot of people. I like it. T?
Well, you said X cross, when you set it for those two terms, it's going to be zero on the bottom. But we didn't include a tau X not in the M1 part.
Well, I need this to be non-zero, this to be non-zero, and I need this to be finite. Then I can conclude I can set this to be zero. And you're worrying whether this is infinite or not. The answer is, if you control these two, you control that. Essentially by that inequality, by that equality. So it can't be infinite. Xiaozhong Yu is not here. Is he? No. He cannot come. Okay, I have his homework. Okay, I want to change tack. And we've been talking about the Schrodinger equation, which is section 6. So now I'm on section 2.7. This is section 2.7. And I want to talk about the method of stationary phase. So we've addressed a bunch of problems, a number of problems. Actually, all for constant, basically almost all for constant coefficient PDE. We'll change that once we come around the second time, but we're looking at equations which look like the following. So I want to use the notation d is equal to 1 upon I partial by partial x. Remember, this is vectorial since x is in Rn. And then I have a differential operator p of d operating in a function u was sum over all multi-indices less than, or say, I want to have an mth order operator, so it's multi-indices not larger than m of coefficients p alpha d alpha. That's one way of writing all of these operating on u. That's one way of writing a constant coefficient differential operator. And I guess a lot of the evolution equations we've studied are in the form, and basically in a general form, which I'll call form 1. So this is evolution equations. Are in this form. Let's see, it looks like d by dt of u is equal to p of d u. And then I want to say u, when t is equal to 0, is going to be some given data. So they're in that form. And let's just try it. Let's just make sure, let's just make all the things we've studied, put them into that form. So this is examples. And we've just been studying the Schrodinger equation. So that looks like this. I want d by dt of, well, let's make u equals t, is equal to, there used to be an I here, so I'll divide by I, or multiply by minus I over 2, dx1 squared plus up to dxn squared u. That's what the Laplacian is. But if I do all these things with the I and d, it gives me a plus I upon 2 d1 squared plus dn squared operating on u, which I think I really should have written as I upon 2 length of d squared u. Length of d squared u is really the sum of the squares of the d's, so it's a polynomial. And I didn't say this was a polynomial. I guess I did. It has to be a polynomial. Ah! U for uniformity. I's are floating around. Partial by partial x and d differ by an I. The heat equation, while we're at it, heat equation, d by dt, u is equal to 1/2, Laplacian u is equal to minus 1/2, same thing, mod d squared of u. The wave equation. Well, this we really need to vectorize things, and we've already done that, actually, just to remind you, d by dt of u and p. Maybe I'll write it this way, that let's make u is equal to a vector, v, p. It's a little bit different than I called it last time, but that way we can write the same thing. D by dt of u is just a vectorial version, and it's equal to, 0, the identity, Laplacian, 0, applied to v and p. So this p of, too many p's, so capital P of d, maybe there are too many p's, so we'll call this vq. I'm sorry for the change in notation. Q, vq. So p of d is a matrix, 0, 1, minus d squared, 0. And then we also had pretty much, I know I've talked at length about each of these equations, but to tell you the truth, the solution method is pretty standard. As you do the following thing, you say that d by dt of u is equal to p of du, so d by dt of u hat, it's constant coefficients, so it's going to be p of xi. Every time you take a d, it corresponds to multiplication by xi on the Fourier side, u hat, and then u hat of c when time is equal to 0 is your hat of the initial data. And so 1 in Fourier transform is this, 1 hat. I'll call it 2. 2 is this. And of course, that's an ODE parameterized by c, whose solution is given by u hat of t, well, explicitly if parametric c and time t is equal to e to the p c t u hat 0 c. And then all the work went into studying solution. And of course, I can come back to the spatial side by saying in inverse Fourier transform, and that goes as following. I guess this is I want to write it as 3, that u of x of t, well, I take e to the p c t U hat 0 phi dxc. I have the nuisance factor 1 upon root 2 pi to the nth power integral e to the I c dot x. Haven't done more than that. And just to make sure that we're talking on the same wavelength, this morning I had the version for the Schrodinger equation on the blackboard, and now I'll put down the wave equation, which is P of C is equal to this 0, 1, minus C squared, 0, and so you exponentiate, you have to exponentiate a matrix. So E to the P C, I really should write it T times peak C, because T times peak C, because peak C could be tensorial. It's equal to this thing we've had on the board a couple times, cosine of C T sine of C T over C minus C sine of mod C T, and then the cosine again, cosine of C T. That's the exponential of that matrix. So there's a certain consistency in this, at least between the Schrodinger equation and the wave equation, but it is not. But and those you solve for forward and backward in time. But we knew that the heat equation, you can't go backward in time. So there's something, you can't just do any old P and just write this down. It doesn't. It's not a good. What you might say, it's not a good. There are perfectly many ill-posed problems which have constant coefficients. So it's not just a formula which gives us a solution which is well-behaved, even as a distribution kernel. So I want to give a criterion to allow us to proceed. So definition one. Everything we've had is constant coefficients, and this is a statement about constant coefficients. So definition one is, let's suppose what I want to do is give sufficient conditions to proceed by this method. I'm going to expand that later, but for the moment, I'm going to give sufficient, because then I want to give an integral, and I want to evaluate that integral. And that's what this section is about. So the statement is, suppose that I, P of C, is real for all C in Rn. Then P of C is called of real type. I know it's a bit funny because I, P, which is real, not P. But you might think you want to put the I on the T, and then P is right. All right, then it's behaving correctly. So P is called of real type. And furthermore, then omega of C, which is equal to I P C, is called the dispersion relation. So this is, I'm defining of real type and dispersion relation. Now, of real type is a little bit of an artifice, partly because what's a deeper topic is the study of symbols whose principal part is of real type, and those are called real principal type. And I'm not talking about these here, but in the literature you talk about symbols of real principal type. So this is just a note. It's a specialization of operators of real, is a vast specialization, a very small piece of operators of real principal type. Okay. And what I want to say is a theorem, which is theorem 2, this is definition 1, which is for differential operators of real type, the initial value problem is well posed in L2. And now, that has a few things, so I'm making notes here. And my first note is that's a specialization of operators of real principal type. And my second note is going to be it's a little more complicated for systems than it is for equations. And Schrodinger is an equation, but the wave is a system. So I don't want to talk about systems now, but I will give a criterion a bit later when I talk about more general things. Okay? Right. So let me stick with scale. I'm talking about the scalar case. We'll discuss here the scalar case. So that means P of C, a function, and U of X, T, a function. So a scalar field. Okay? It starts in L2, it stays in L2, and the evolution is continuous in L2. Okay? And so the proof of this. So I'll tell you what I want to say today, but we don't have that much longer. So what I want to say is two things. One, I want to prove this, but it's very short, or I'm going to abbreviate it, so it will be very short. And then I want to talk about the character of solutions of such equations. Okay? So what by well-posed we mean if initial data U naught is in L2, then the solution U of XT will also be in L2 for each T. And let's see, and the evolution equation, how do I want to say the flow? And the flow. So you start with data U naught and you flow for time t, and that gives you a function of x, is continuous. It's continuous in t. So in particular, what we have to do is show that if I have a solution uxt minus u0 of x, and I measure the difference in L2, and I take the limit as t goes to 0, I get 0. So the data is taken on an L2 sense, at least by the okay. And so let's do this using the Fourier transform. And I'm also going to do the lazy person's method. And what? I was going to say that I was going to work in Schwartz class rather than L2, but in fact I don't think I have to. What I have to show you is that I have an expression. What do I have to show you? What I'm going to show you is an expression for the flow, and I'll show you that the flow is continuous in L2. And that leaves a little bit of a question, which is, does that expression satisfy the equation? And the answer will be yes if it's smooth enough. But it'll be the right expression. Okay, so I think my lazy man's method today is to say that last statement. Just skimp a little bit on the last statement. So clearly my expression for a solution, U of XT, is going to be e to the I cx. It's going to be from 3. E to the I cx. E to the t, p of c. U, 0 hat of c. D c. And the difference between uxt minus u 0 of x, actually to study continuity of the flow, so this is equal to, what do you say, this has a name, which is the flow at time t given data, initial data u 0. And so this is the flow at t minus the identity operating on u0. And you want to show that the limit of this, you want to show, we want to show that this goes to 0 as t goes to 0. But let's see, I'm missing something. I'm really sorry. It's of real type if IP is real. So that's if P is pure imaginary. So what I want to say is IP is real, so I really would like to write this, IT omega. So P, I missed by a minus sign. Minus IT omega. And now omega is real. That's what being of real type is. Yes? This is a specialation of the class of operators of real principle type, which is the word that people use. Okay. And so let me think. what I want to say is that this we can show because of the scalar nature, because omega is real and the scalar nature of this problem. So that means what I have to show is that for u L2, that means u hat c in L2, then u of x t minus u0 of x has an expression, squared L2, has an expression which I use in this, which I can use here, which is the integral of the absolute value of e to the minus I t omega c minus 1 times u0 hat c squared, has this squared d c. And what you have to show is that the limit, so what you have to show is for u0 in L2, show that limit as t goes to 0 of this thing equals 0. And now let's talk about the sense in which that is true. For any fixed u0, this will hold. So let's see. That's called the strong topology. So it will hold. So the answer is yes. In the strong topology. Well, let me see. What I'm showing. Yeah. The answer is yes. That holds. For fixed u naught, then this limit goes to zero. So this is continuity in the strong topology. Of L2. So I wanted to formulate questions. So here's a question. The flow is an operator. And so is the flow continuous in the operator topology? That is, if you apply the flow, but you want it to go to zero uniformly over functions which are in the unit ball in Hilbert space, it functions U0 in unit ball in Hilbert space. Does that go to zero uniformly? And the answer is, depends on omega. So my further question is, it's no longer a question. I'm muttering about it, but it is, think about whether the flow phi t is continuous. It's an operator, which depends, the family of operators depending on t. Is it continuous in operator topology, in the strong operator? So you're supposed to think about that. And if the answer were no here, you could say, well, if it's not strong in the strong, it's not continuous in the strong topology, there's some cases where you might have it continuous in the weak topology. So other possibilities for, it turns out to be strong will imply weak, but the other cases, is it a weak topology? You can also, that also might be an issue. Okay, I don't want to kill that theorem to death. I'd rather talk about the asymptotics about these integral expressions. So I want to rewrite my expression for u of xt. So that's equal to 1 upon root 2 pi to the n. I'm going to give two expressions. I'm going to work with a second one. Integral e to the I c dot x e to the minus I omega of c t. All right, that's from there. Apply to u hat 0 of c dx. But what I want to do actually is 2 pi to the n, double integral, e to the I c dot x minus y, e to the minus I omega c t u naught of y dy dx. Actually, I'm a little bit ambiguous which one I want to work with. But I did want to rewrite this one more time. Sorry about all the chalk. 2 pi n, double integral. It'll be u naught of y dy dx. And I just want to rewrite the phase in a certain way. I want to say this is e to the I c dot x minus y over t. I want to put a t inside. Minus omega of c, and outside I want to multiply by t. That t to cancel that t. It's a scalar after all. And I want to say that this is an important object. So this whole thing is the e to the I phase, but this is an important object within the phase. So in fact, Kelvin discussed this, so I want to give you a second definition, which is 3, which is really due to Kelvin. So 18, I'm not sure when. Okay? He said that there are two quantities of interest, two velocities of interest that you can understand by looking at this phase function. So it says one is Cp equals the phase velocity, was equal to what he said, because he was working in one dimension, was it's really omega c over c, but since we're working with vectors, we say it's omega c times c over mod c squared, something with the magnitude 1 upon c, but at the direction of c. Okay? And then, maybe more importantly, he said there's a group velocity. Both are vectors. The group velocity. And that is simply d by d, partial by partial c of omega. Okay? And I'm running out of time, but I want to discuss its significance just in hand-waving terms. And then I'm going to come back to this next week. Oh, and then I want to compute it for a couple of equations. Okay? So it's significance, and then calculations and four examples. Four simple examples. So I want to talk about phase velocity. So phase velocity. So any of these solutions is a superposition of complex exponentials. So let's, for the moment, only look at one complex exponential, never mind a sum. So I'm going to have, this is a possible solution, infinite energy solution, but it is a possible solution. E to the I k dot x minus omega of k t for fixed wave number, k fixed, equals, some people call it wave number. Okay? And then I want to say that, and now, and then we like to read the exponential in a certain way. So what I want to say is, I want to read it as follows. I want to divide by t, and move my parenthesis. And what I want to say is, as time evolves, I want to look at points in space-time where the phase is constant. So if there's a wave moving along here, I want to put my finger on a peak, and I want to follow that peak. Of course, this is complex, so a peak is not the highest point. It's going around the unit circle, so I want to put my finger on pi or 0 or pi upon 2 and move with that point. And I want to know how fast that point moves. Well, that moves where this is equal to a constant. So it says, actually, that's not quite right. I didn't want to quite do this. So that point, so fixed phase, so points of fixed phase move as, I should have rewritten this as E to the I K dot, that's what I want to do, X over T minus omega K. Well, now I want to get this K dot something to be omega K, so it's K dot K over K squared. T. Let me do this. And so K is given, that gives you, that's a constant, gives you the character of the wave. Where does the phase stay a fixed value? When this is equal to a constant. That says X over T is equal to omega K over K squared plus that constant you're trying to achieve. So this is has units of speed, and this is the phase velocity. If you try to keep your finger on the peak, that's how fast it goes. Good. I tried to make a drawing in my notes. Here's something which is complex exponential, and here's time moving on. And this peak has moved over there, and this peak has moved over there. So these move at C phase. And that's a K-dependent thing. Okay? That's what I wanted to say. What's C group? Someone have a question? Let's see what C group is. So now let's make... there. That's it. Omega k over mod k squared. Omega k over mod k squared. Omega k is a scalar. Mod k squared is a scalar. K is the vector part. Okay? Two. Let's take a wave packet. And the whole point, actually, of this short section of the lectures is to describe this phenomenon. Okay? So a wave packet... Without me, I'm going to say it more precisely next week, but I want to say it's going to be something that looks like this. An envelope. This is X. This is my initial data, an envelope, and then some oscillation. And the distance between these peaks is like 2 pi upon k. So the higher k is, the more oscillatory your solution. And what I want to do is claim, and it's up to me to support this by my lecture next week, my claim is that u of x of t, given this data, will travel at velocity c group, which is equal to d by d c of omega of c. And so a picture of that is, here's x, here's t, and I'm going to superpose on x this thing which is like an envelope with oscillatory. But at later time, this center of this thing is going to travel with d by d c of omega velocity, and it will be an envelope, possibly distorted, but has some similar character, that's moving along at a different velocity. Different? Let's just try it out. What's the distance between peaks? 2 pi over k. 2 pi over k. And this is partial c omega at k. So let's try it out. So one is the Schrodinger equation. Not try it out, I'm just going to actually compute these things, see what you get. So here, omega of c is equal to 1/2 c squared. And so cp is equal to 1/2 c. Just calculate. And cg is equal to d by dc of c squared, 1/2 c squared, is equal to c, which is twice. So the group velocity is twice the phase velocity in quantum mechanics. Interesting. Two, the wave equation. I know I disallowed the wave equation from our discussion because I didn't allow vector equations, but let's put it back in. And if we had, or actually if you just inspect this formula I have on the board, you'll see that omega of c is equal to c. Well, it's actually, there are two waves with two components, but plus or minus c. I've made the speed of light 1, usual mathematician thing. And then c phase is equal to plus or minus c. No, plus or minus 1. Well, it's plus or minus c over mod c. And c group is equal to plus or minus c over mod c. They're the same. And that means the light cone has a lot of significance for the wave equation. Another indication the light cone has a lot of significance for the wave equation. Three, let's take the KdV equation, but I don't want to do nonlinear things. So I'm going to take the area equation, which is d by dt of u is equal to dx cubed u minus, so that omega of c is equal to c cubed. So c phase is equal to, and this is x in R actually. It's really a scalar. It's a one-dimensional problem. So c phase is c squared, c group is equal to 3c squared. So you can get things which move 3 times as fast. Their group velocity is 3 times as fast as their phase velocity. 4, I'm going to do 4, but I want you to do 5, please. And 5 is the Klein-Gordon equation. Where omega of c is equal to mod c squared plus m squared. M is the mass. Let's just make it 1. Well, let's leave it m squared, just for the fun of it. Positive number. Square root. And I want you to compute cp and C, G, and decide which one's bigger than which. And I want, moreover, compare that with the speed of light. With speed of light, which is equal to 1 in this case. And 1's going to be bigger and 1's going to be less than the speed of light. That's kind of one of the paradoxes of information carrying. And what I want you to do is decide which of the velocities, at which velocity you can carry information. A phase velocity or a group velocity. Okay, so just you work out the Klein-Gordon for yourself. It's kind of nice. 4, I want to give you the water, surface water waves. What I'm going to do is make the depth equal infinity, just so I don't have to worry about it. I'm going to make them very small waves. I want you to drop a rock in the pond and then look at the ripples that it makes a little bit later. Well, that omega of xi turns out to be the square root of xi, square root of modulus of xi. And so the phase velocity, c phase, is equal to mod xi over xi. It's 1 over mod xi in the xi direction. That's the unit direction. And the c group is equal to 1/2. 1 over root mod xi. Because you take the derivative of the square root, you get a factor 1/2 times xi over mod xi. So it's equal to, it's in the same direction, but equal to 1/2 the group velocity. And now, if the pond were running, we could finish by just doing an experiment. I'm going to tell you the result of that experiment, which is you drop a rock in the pond, so here's water. Here's x, and you drop a rock in the pond, and then you make, that makes an envelope with peaks going through it. And I want you to look at how that propagates. So here's a later x, and here's time evolving. So the packet moves, and the ripples in it move. Well, now, the group velocity is 1/2 the phase velocity. So if I look at this ripple going through the packet, it is now here, and by this time it's now here. So the ripples are moving faster. It moved from back to front in the wave packet as the packet moves along at the C group. So ripples move twice as fast as the packet information. If I did the same for quantum mechanics, the ripples move half as fast. And the area equation, ripples move a third as fast. So there's some distinction. I'll stop here.